Hello, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 15th of July, 2009. And I'm your host, Hereward Fenton. And tonight, it is my great pleasure and a great honour to have on the show Leon Ashby, the President of the Australian Climate Skeptics. I'll just read to you a little from some information that I have. Leon Ashby is president of the Climate Skeptics Party, and in 2002 he was the governor of the Landholders to the Environment and is a dairy farmer in South Australia, and he has previously been a director of the Australian Environment Foundation. Leon Ashby, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Sir Herbert.
I hope I got that introduction correct.
Pretty close. It was convener, not governor, of the landholders for the environment and things like that. But, yep, that's pretty good.
Excellent. Yes, I got that from SourceWatch online. I guess before we kick off with the sort of media part of the interview, I guess I should just ask you, just to get this out of the way, because you are the first public figure we've had on the show to discuss this topic, and we discuss the topic in virtually every show. But you're
not
the first.
Really?
Yes, yes, we're very focused on it with the emissions trading scheme coming up. So I just want to just ask you point blank: are you an agent of Big Oil?
No, I'm doing this voluntarily, so haven't been given any money from. Any companies. In fact, we've gone to some companies to try and get some political party support, like all political parties do, and at this stage none of them are very interested because they are afraid of getting branded as a skeptic by the green side of things. So, I mean, at this stage, even ordinary companies are pretty afraid of giving us a hand. So it's all done just by volunteers, and we're all doing it out of our own money. So I hope that answers your question, right?
Indeed. And, you know, it's just that I felt it was important to ask that for those in the audience who have heard that, you know, that sort of bandied about. And it's often accused that the climate skeptics are all supported by Exxon or, you know, some shadowy group that represents the oil cartels. And however, in my experience from my research, it seems to me that the oil industry is actually backing cap and trade schemes, and do you have similar results in your research?
Yeah, well, I can say that we approached one oil company, and they weren't that keen to talk to us, and they were basically of the view that they're going to talk to the government behind the scenes themselves and try and get a good deal. And I suppose their argument would be, we're going to lose so many jobs, so you better make sure that any emissions trading scheme compensates for that. I imagine that's their idea. They're in it to make money, and they probably think, well, whichever way the politics of it goes, they'll deal with the government of the day. So to a degree, I think that's correct. I think it's been a lot of scare tactics by people who are, let's say, on the green side of things, who are wanting to say that the people who are climate skeptics do so for motives not very honourable. So in our case, the whole party, we've got 200 and close to 270 members now, and we'll be, I'd say, just about everybody is either a private business person or somebody who's sorted the issue through for themselves. Some of us have got a few dollars, but most people are basically, still paying off their own home. So there's not a lot of money that we've got spare.
Yeah, excellent. And do you actually have a political party at this stage, or are you still trying to get the numbers together to actually form a party?
Well, we've done everything bar being registered, which means we've got a constitution and all the things that you have to be a party. We just need 500 members to then be registered. Now, to be registered, you then are entitled to getting money from the government after each election, around the order of $2 per vote, which all the major parties do, which means that Liberal and Labor get about $20 million each time there's a federal election. But, you know, you can still put candidates up as individuals up to that point.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. So that figure of 500 is before you get that, you can't actually fully register it, but you can do all of the other processes that are necessary to make it function once you cross that line, right?
Exactly. And the other thing that you do is you get your name on the ballot paper as a party too when you get your 500 members.
Excellent. Look, let me just explain to you like where we come, the angle we come at this whole topic. On Truth News Radio, we focus on a lot of truth and justice issues, yep. And a lot of human rights issues, and also, you know, issues of science. But what we're really concerned about is when issues of social justice or human rights are being abused, and especially when science is politicized to the extent that it actually creates an unjust situation. And that is what we feel is going on with the whole climate change debate. I mean, you know, years ago, I was quite open to the idea of the greenhouse theory, and it made sense to me as a theory, and I still think it has some potential as a theory. But when, I guess over the last 5 years, as we started to see it more and more politicized,
absolutely, yes.
A lot of us started questioning it, and as I started researching it more, it all started to fall apart. I mean, the whole scientific basis of it started to fall apart, and all of the arguments now that are used seem to be based on dogmatic positions, kind of almost medieval thinking that we must toe the line. There is consensus. And we have to do it because doing something is better than doing nothing, and if we do nothing, it could be the end of the world. You know, so
that's right. Now that's exactly the case, and it's the same for many of the people in the party, including myself. I looked at the issue about 6 years ago. I lost my property rights in Queensland on with the excuse of the Kyoto Protocol. Now, so because of that, I wasn't able to manage the land, wasn't able to put fences up in certain parts of our land, and the excuse was that we had to keep the trees there because of the Kyoto Protocol. So when that happened, up to that point, I was quite happy to get carbon credits for trees and whatever. That was the talk. When we actually looked into it, started to realise that the government wasn't actually going to pay for carbon credits on native vegetation. It was basically, well, you know, they're native trees, you should leave them there, and the fact that you could use the land for something else before and was they weren't going to compensate you for it. So that was one injustice. Then as we started, a few of us started talking together and on blogs, we decided, well, in the last year or so, hey, we've got no one to vote for. Why don't, you know, someone's going to have to get a party for us to vote for, at least in the Senate, to say we want to reject this emissions trading scheme. Because at this stage, well, at that stage, there was no politician who was going to say they were a climate skeptic, and just about it all caved into towing the party line. And if they didn't, they were threatened with being kicked out. And that still is the case in a couple of parties at the moment.
Right. So it's really we seem to have reached an impasse now, and obviously the government is steaming ahead, you know, all speed. The propaganda machine in the form of mainstream media, especially ABC, BBC, is continuously beaming out the message of alarm and alarmism. Meanwhile, more and more scientists are, you know, getting their voice heard through the cracks that are opening up. But in terms of, I think, the average person's perception, they're virtually invisible.
That's right.
It's an incredible situation to be in. I'd just like to read a little from your website, because the Climate Skeptics, that's www.climateskeptics.com.au website, is really excellent, and I think it's a great place to start for anyone who's listening who wants to sort of start to get a perspective on the skeptical view. It's got a lot of really excellent links, really excellent. I actually do web development as my professional work, so I can appreciate a good website when I see it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just read from the page on the carbon tax. It says here, the climate skeptics are dedicated to oppose all emissions trading schemes and carbon taxation. ETS is CRAP because carbon really ain't pollution. Carbon dioxide, CO2, is a colourless, odourless and non-polluting gas. It is just as essential to life as oxygen and water and just as pollution-free. All living things, whether plants or animals, are made of carbon compounds. Carbon is the building block of life. The entire chain of carbon-based life starts with plants on land and in the sea, absorbing carbon dioxide from the air, and through a process called photosynthesis, converting that CO2 into plant mass and plant food for the entire animal kingdom. More than 90% of a plant's dry matter is processed CO2. Carbon dioxide is entirely beneficial. Increased levels of atmospheric CO2 increase plant growth and plant food for all creatures, great and small, and CO2 has no significant or adverse impact on climate. Wow. You know, it doesn't get much clearer than that. And you've got references there. I know there are references so that those statements can be substantiated.
That's right. And look, there are so many injustices involved with this idea of taxing carbon, you know, and things like livestock being, they normally eat grass, which is sort of produced from photosynthesis and that. So in the end, the livestock industry is going to be taxed for, emissions that in the end, there is no net actual gain or of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere in rough terms because it's a loop. And yet, livestock are going to be put into this carbon emissions trading scheme at some stage, and that's going to be an injustice. There's a lot of other things that'll be an injustice, and that'll be people having their rights taken away and on various issues, which certainly is, if you're on the coast, you'll have housing development stopped under the pretext of rising sea levels, and that's, no more likely than, with emissions than without it. Yeah, and there'll be other things happening too. So there's a whole lot of things happening in society based on that, and it's entirely unjustified and illogical and unscientific. But the hard part is to convince the community about all this. And how are you finding that's going in your radio shows here, Erwitt?
Well, we have an audience of people who are tuned in to, I guess, an alternative perspective. And when I say alternative, I mean alternative to the other alternative, which is, I guess, the environmental movement. And, you know, it's there is a new movement of people who are aware of the deceptions in our media and from our government, unfortunately the mainstream environmental movement seems to be a little bit blinkered to. And it's unfortunate, you know, because we really do need to get together and we need to understand that the agenda here, that actually the environmental movement has been misled. And that's what gets us back to this truth and justice issue. And I don't think they realise that there is a deeper agenda here. And it all centres on the demonisation of carbon dioxide. Because when you demonise CO2, this fits in with eugenics policies. And a lot of discussion has been coming up recently about the kind of convergence of depopulation agendas and eugenics policies towards basically the human race, tying in with this blaming of CO2. Because once you start blaming CO2, any living thing is potentially, you know, bad because you're producing CO2 merely to breathe.
Yeah, I'll take you up on that, because I think the whole green movement, let's say the environmental movement, I believe it started out with good intentions. I think that at some stage there was a quantum shift to, let's say, the left, where the idealism went to things which were anti-people, anti-democracy, a whole lot of things that really most people didn't realise. And now we're getting to the stage where some of the policies and ideas and that coming out of what I call the green religion are very much going to destroy the very things that we've fought for the last 200 years of improving our lifestyle, our standard of living, our health, our food supply, all those sorts of things that we need to improve our lot in the world. And at the same time, we actually improve the environment too. But a lot of that gets demonised because of this ideology. And so we as a party recognise that, and our goal is to communicate that bit by bit to different people and say, well, you know, if you want an alternative to the green religion, and the green religion affects the Liberal and Labor parties because they have to get the green vote. So they are very bent that way. We want to be the honest broker, I suppose, and get the balance of power in the Senate. And whichever side of politics wins in the lower house, our goal is to then bring some common sense to policy issues in debates in the upper house, and hopefully get Australia back on the track that probably it was about 15, 20 years ago, where science actually it wasn't being politicised the way it is today.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a really noble enterprise, and obviously your party does have a big task ahead of it. Even though you could say it's a single issue party, this issue is so pervasive, cuts through so many different areas that it really, it's worthy of a political party, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, the climate change, CO2 issue does cut across so many issues.
Yeah.
People sort of say to us, oh, you're a single issue party. And we say, well, hang on, you know, there's a lot of things here. You know, you're talking about climate change being blamed for your bushfires and all that sort of stuff. Well, cuts across that. Cuts across your development issues. Cuts across, your productivity issues. All these sorts of things. And so we're going to be looking at healthcare. Like, there's so many things that people are going to have to sort of cut back on. They're going to have higher costs, and businesses are going to change. And so really, the issue not only touches it from an emissions trading side of things, it actually cuts across it on other aspects too. Now, we also realise that the freedom of speech issue is one thing, like the ABC really hasn't been giving both sides of the debate, and it's being, one-eyed on this. And other channels have too, and we sort of see that this cuts across freedom of speech and censorship and all those sorts of things. So hopefully if we win this issue and we as a party get a bit of a foothold in politics, our goal is to actually bring those things back into play, freedom of speech, good balanced debates. Our national broadcast is actually doing the job they're supposed to do. We think that the way that that Al Gore and others have actually brought the issue so far right to the brink of being implemented, that if it does get implemented a little bit and get kicked out, or even if it only gets to the stage it is today before it gets stopped, we'll all be able to remember and look back on the time that we nearly believed into, tricked into taxing carbon dioxide. We'll laugh about it in years to come, how crazy it was, but at the moment it's still in vogue. But I think the cracks are there for this whole idea to be blown open and turned around, at least in the next few years, if not maybe the next 12 months.
Yeah, look, let's hope so, and let's hope we do have a chance to have a laugh about it in the future. I'm curious to know what the key differences are between the Australian emissions trading scheme that's been proposed and the ones that are already operating in Europe and the one that has now recently passed the US Senate. Because it's very hard to really get the details on it in a way that I can understand. Can you fill us in?
Okay, well, I'm probably not as up on it as what other people are, because while we're dealing with what's been even our emissions trading scheme is being changed a bit. So, for example, right. some places, what they call the big polluters, the people with the lots of carbon emissions, they are being compensated. So when you, in Australia, so when you get to a certain level of so many tonnes per, or $1 million per tonnes of emissions and things like that, then you you get some compensation. Well, I don't believe that that's what's happened in Europe, and I don't believe that's part of what's happening in America in their system or proposed system. So
right.
The one in there's also the fact that in Australia you have a capping of $10 a tonne carbon. I don't believe that's happened in Europe. But all these things, the three different systems are basically the same as cap and trade. Basically, there is going to be a limit on carbon dioxide emissions, and then that cap will be reduced, or you'll have to trade your way out of it so that you've got to have trees planted or things like that to compensate for what you're emitting. Now, we did some calculations on that just out of interest, and sure. if you were to do Australia's whole amount of emissions, which was 500 million tonnes, I believe it was, and you had to plant so many trees to compensate for it, the amount of trees over a 17-year period, which is when you grow most trees to, you know, their average or their best size for sequestering carbon, you're using, you know, millions of hectares and, you know, the size of, I think we worked out to be the size of Tasmania, Victoria and New South Wales, those three states would have to be covered in trees, sequestering carbon for all of Australia's emissions ultimately, you know, and then after 17 years you'd have to find that area again. You know, these numbers are absolutely huge. People just don't realise how crazy it is, this idea. In effect, it means that really there won't be much sequestering of carbon if these emissions trading comes in. We basically won't be able to emit carbon dioxide in fossil fuels or anything else after about 10 or 20 years because there'll be no other ways of capturing the carbon and storing it. We don't even believe that doing it underground or work, you know, it's just such an amazing thing. You know, people have tried to pump water underground. It's okay in certain aquifers, but when you get to a certain depth, you have to actually push it down under pressure, and who knows what happens when you start doing those sorts of things. So it's going to be a very interesting thing, but I think the whole thing will fall over in the next couple of years, just due to the fact of the Earth getting colder in the next few years. I think most people are starting to realise the whole thing's a hoax, and there's probably about 40% of the community already sceptical of the claims of the alarmists on this.
Yeah, yes, on this question of the evidence that the climate is actually cooling, now, I mean, it's quite clear, I mean, and the articles are there, the research is there, but the way it's presented, whenever there's a mainstream piece done on it, always seems to mask the information. The head of the Antarctic Science Division was quoted back in May as saying that the average amount of ice in Antarctica has increased steadily over the last 30 years, even though there are some parts of Antarctica where ice has been thinning out. But the increases were more than the decreases.
That's
but
when correct, yeah.
But when it was reported in the Sydney Morning Herald, it was a much smaller quote that didn't include the rest of that information. And mm-hmm. it was quite interesting because I was actually having an argument with someone about this. And I said, well, look, I'm pretty sure that the ice in Antarctica is actually getting thicker. And he said, no, it's definitely not. And anyway, he's a lawyer, actually, this guy. Anyway, but he then sent me this article from the Sydney Morning Herald that quoted the head of the Antarctic Science Division. So I Googled his name, and I came up with another article, a much longer and detailed article, in which he was clearly saying the exact opposite. This sort of thing seems to happen all the time when you research this subject.
Look, absolutely. And look, it's even getting worse than that. Like Al Gore was even on the 7:30 report saying, you know, things like his claims have been identical to the IPCC's claims about things like, in all his aspects. Well, we know that Al Gore said that sea level rises would be in the order of 6 or 7 metres, and yet the IPCC says it's only at the most 59 centimetres, or about 0.6 of a metre. But of course, we dispute that that's even likely, because that's an exaggerated figure. But the bottom line is that people like Al Gore are actually lying on TV, and anybody could find those facts and give them a hard time. But obviously, the reporters at this stage haven't got to the stage of grilling them and sort of really sniffing it out. So the whole thing is very much being able to distort or massage the facts and give the impression that all this big catastrophes is still going to happen. Now, the question is there going to be a stage where the mainstream media is going to kick over and start to realise it is a hoax, and start to then say, well, who actually made these false claims? And they'll go back and look at some of the bureaucrats and actually realise that a lot of their figures, they've actually been given the facts and they've actually fudged it, so that their political bosses actually say what was going to suit the politics of the day and get them some votes. So that's we believe those things will actually happen in the future, and I'll be interested to see if that really comes to pass.
Yeah, look, excellent. I'm just going to take a really short break, and then I just want to get back into the Al Gore presence here in Australia and some more of these controversial scientific topics. So just stand by there, and we'll just take a really quick break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, we are back with Truth News Radio Australia, and my guest tonight, Leon Ashby, President of the Australian Climate Skeptics Party. And it's been a really, really interesting discussion so far, and I'd like to actually just talk a little bit about what happened this week with Al Gore being in Melbourne. I understand that there was a protest that was organised. And how did that go, Leon?
Yeah, look, it went very well. Probably a couple of weeks out from Al Gore coming, we only heard the news probably 3 weeks before he turned up, and I said, well, gee, here's a good opportunity to actually make a protest, make a bit of an influence, and just see whether that, it starts to resonate and get in the media. Well, we sort of... it was a very early start. We had to start about 6 o'clock rocking up, and then we wandered down, and all the guests, I had about 1,000 guests lined up to go into this to get a free breakfast. Now, I suppose it's about $100 a head that someone paid for 1,000 people to hear Al Gore. A couple of the people said, yeah, well, we don't know what to think about climate change or whatever it is. So we're here for the free breakfast. And anyway, so we got about 10 minutes talking to these 1,000 people with a loud hailer out the front, explaining all the graphs and the fact that the Earth hasn't warmed in the last 10 years. In fact, it started to cool the last couple of years. The fact that the sea levels have stopped rising in the last couple of years, that the ice in the Arctic is actually starting to increase again, and all those sorts of facts. So we gave it to them for about 10 minutes several times. And then we gave some speeches, and then the media had some interviews, and we're fortunate enough to get on SBS and ABC and a couple of programs, and went right around Australia. So we're very pleased with the result, that at least people are starting to realise that there's a few of us there, and we actually are very sceptical, and we're not afraid of saying so.
Yeah, look, that's excellent. So how many people, again, did you say were turned up at the actual protest?
Well, we had 30 of our own people.
Right, yeah.
Yep, and there was another small group there that were from a different group. So, but all together, there was probably 40 of us that were on the sceptic side, yeah.
Look, it's really hard when we're dealing with this this wall in the form of official truth propped up by the corporatized mass media. And, you know, there are so many individual scientific points of debate that we could talk about. I mean, one that comes to mind is the hockey stick, which, again, because continually there seems to be different graphs popping up. And I've seen a graph recently that showed, again, that hockey stick shape. And I've seen the graph that you've got on your website and that I've seen on other websites like What's Up With That and a few other like really hardcore research sites. But they still seem to be promoting this graph that really does have this hockey stick shape at the end. I mean, what do we do about that? Because, I mean, it sort of gets down to the point where, well, they're saying one thing, you know, we're saying another thing, and then they just say, well, we've got all these experts, you know, so...
Okay, well, what happens is that, and this is where science and politics and the media intersect, but sometimes the science, as in this case, the really hardcore hard science, is left out of the real politics and is left out of the public debate. So you don't get a Michael Mann who, you know, is responsible for the hockey stick graph, which has been criticised by a lot of people on the sceptic side because it has weighted certain types of tree ring data and other data. It's weighted it unfairly so that you end up with a hockey stick. Now, when you look at other evidence, you actually clearly get things which show a medieval warm period and a little ice age in past ages, and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of that too. You know, the Thames River freezing and the you know, up to the 1840s every year, and that happened for many, many years. So it doesn't happen today. Well, very rarely. I think I've heard of one person who's seen the Thames River freeze on the top, but it was solid ice at different stages, you know, in the history, recorded history. So all those bits of information, we need a public debate. It hasn't happened yet, and at some stage we think if we keep the pressure up, it should happen, and at about that stage, most people in the community will start to see, you know, the scales fall from their eyes, so to speak, and realise the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah. I mean, the evidence... over the last 10 years seems to be that we have been in a cooling trend. It seems very apparent to me that it's cooler. It's been cooling down. I mean, I live in Sydney, but you know, you can't sort of extrapolate from that, but I mean, it's definitely not getting warmer over the last few years here. And I think 1998 was a warm, very warm year. I think that was a peak in the,
yep,
in the temperature
right.
graph.
Big El Nino. Yep.
Yeah. So, look, just a few other things I wanted to bring up. One of the aspects of this whole argument and controversy is the way people who are skeptics or whistleblowers are treated. I mean, you know, the term skeptic is almost used as a term of abuse now, whereas really it's a term that used to be highly respected because it means you're a scientifically oriented person.
That's exactly right. Look, in any other field, if you call yourself a skeptic, you're actually, you know, taken with a lot of respect. But in this one, look, the Greens and the media have actually gone along with this demonisation of it. Now, we actually have the debate. We have called ourselves the climate skeptics, and we said, look, the debate's going to swing around one day, and at that stage, if you don't actually call yourself what you really are, then, you know, you're really not standing on principle. So we've decided to stand on principle, cop the flak, and hopefully realise that that's one way to actually turn public opinion. If you actually can say, well, come on, debate us with the facts of the evidence. We're happy to debate on TV, radio, anywhere, anytime with anybody, any of the information. So no one's taken us up yet.
Right.
But we look forward to that day, you know.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, Steve Fielding got a pretty bad run on ABC. I did watch the interview with Tony Jones, and he was kind of like a scorpion with Steve Fielding. And I've seen him also. I think when there was the film, The Great Global Warming Swindle,
with Martin Birkin, and
yes.
He also did the same with Ian Plimer too.
Right. Yes.
So Yeah, look, that attacking skeptics, we don't mind actually that they attack, you know, people ourselves even, provided they do the same with Al Gore. But do they do that? No. So,
yeah.
Or with others, so David Karoly or anybody else. So it's a matter of being fair to people, and that's what the ABC hasn't done. And I think that'll come back to haunt them.
And this, despite the fact that Al Gore has been caught in gross errors in his film. I mean,
yep.
the most glaring one is the lag, between climate. What is it? The 800-year lag.
CO2 in the Vostok ice cores. Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
And then that one's really, you know, I mean, he's got it the wrong way around. You know, it should be that CO2 is supposed to rise before temperature, but clearly it doesn't, and it's the other way around. And he won't debate that, he won't argue. And at this stage, the only thing that they can do is to continually avoid debate. Now, the most important thing people from our position can do is to continually make those points. And eventually, we believe that we'll be, able to be get that opportunity to say that more and more. Now, I'm getting a few opportunities to speak, you know. Got a couple of seconds worth when they did the protest and
right.
That went around Australia. I think that starts to get an effect. If they hear that 10 or 20 times in the next couple of months, those sorts of things, will it be great? I mean, Steve Fielding's doing a fantastic job, what he's trying to do, but it needs a few more people. And I think at some stage there'll be some public identities starting to flip over too. You know, you might even get some people who are in TV or, you know, movie land or whatever that'll start. When things start moving, you'll start to see them coming out too.
Yeah, hopefully. And hopefully you'll be able to get the 500 members for your party. Now, just in case there's people listening who want to join the party, what are the criteria to be a member of a political party?
Basically, you can't be a member of another party.
Right.
Unfortunately, we've got people who are... We do allow associate members, but we can't claim them as our 500 members. But basically... over the age of 18, and you pay $10 membership, and we don't find that you've done anything that's going to cause anything of an embarrassment to the party. It's just a standard sort of thing that anybody in any party has to believe. You accept, of course, the principles of the party
right.
that we've got. You accept that there's no evidence at this stage. You go along with the scientific evidence, the best scientific evidence on the issue. Now, if the science ever changed, we'd be happy to go along with it, because we're actually not afraid of there being good debate and changes. Science is never settled. You know, there's always room for more information, more evidence. But at this stage, certainly shows that climate change is natural, and we'll be wasting our time with the emissions trading scheme. And we certainly welcome more members. So if anyone wants to join up, just go on our website and sign up online. You can do that over the internet.
Yeah, well, that's great. And as I said, you know, we have a few hundred downloaders at present, so you know, we may help you get over the line there. And
that'd be fantastic.
I do hope we can talk to you again. Is that a possibility? We'd like to.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, look,
great.
No worries at all. Look, we'll probably. We're talking about another protest.
Okay.
In a little bit of time. I won't quite announce that just tonight, but let's put it this way. I think you're getting my emails, are you?
I'm on the mailing list, yeah.
Yep,
yeah,
great. Well, you'll get that probably in the next week and get a bit of news. So I'm quite happy to chat to you any time that you want to talk about what we're up to and what that's going to be about.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. In fact, Josh, who co-hosts with me here, we've discussed a few ideas of our own for organising a bit of street theatre. The idea of the green police,
yep.
I think it opens itself to comedy. And, you know, we're actually thinking about staging a little bit of street theatre there with, you know, especially with this recent announcement about bottled water being banned as well.
Yeah.
Which riding on the CO2, you know, concept,
That's right.
Sort of criminalising bottled water, you know.
And look, there'll be some fun and games, because we're talking about doing protests which will be things like having the last free lunch, or the, you know, the last time that you can do this or that, because it'll soon be taxed, you know. I mean, theoretically, you know, if they're going to ban CO2, they should be banning carbonated beer and carbonated soft drinks. So, you know, you might have your last fizzy drink, you know.
Yeah.
So we could certainly take the mickey out of it. It's such a ridiculous idea that, you know, having an emissions trading scheme. So I think that's one way to actually get the message out when people start laughing at it and realising how ridiculous it is to tax, you know, plant food. And that's what CO2 is. It really is. It's going to be a great comedy for a lot of people to get their teeth into, I think.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that's it's got just so many different angles and so many different ways that people can engage with it. And you know, we want to communicate that this is something that's worthwhile getting interested in. It's a really important issue. It's a truth and justice issue. So anyone out there who's interested, you know, please, we'll put the notes up to the climateskeptics.com.au site. And, you know, we just really want to, and we'll continue to, you know, any news that comes out will be on here. And we're just going to keep pumping it out.
Yeah, that's great. And look, our party, well, it's based around this carbon dioxide emissions trading scheme issue. Look, we want to get that one out of the way and knocked over too, but we think that there were so many other issues that the Green Religion has attacked that needs to be tackled as well, and things like the rights of people to be able to clear vegetation around on their own property to protect themselves during bushfires, all those sorts of things, with you know, development in areas with threats of sea level rises or supposed sea level rises and that, but there's no evidence to support, all those sorts of things. We want to deal with that, and we want to hopefully be able to get some common sense and some proper evidence, proper science, proper debates in the public realm and the ABC, all those things tackled in the next few years. And if people think that that's a pretty good thing to get involved in, and they believe passionately about improving things for us in Australia, well, we'd certainly welcome in the party, that's for sure.
Excellent, excellent. Look, I think on that note, we'll probably wind up for tonight. It's been a really great honour having you on, Leon, and great. I wish you the best of luck with the party to get to the next election. I hope that you're present contesting the next election. And yeah, just again, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Look, it's been a pleasure, Herbert, and look forward to catching up with some of your listeners maybe on the email if they drop us a line and get on the mailing list, and we'll probably flick out an email or two each week, depending on what's going on, to keep people up to date with our activities and who's doing what. So it's all good fun at the moment. So thanks very much for having us, and we'll catch you around.
Great. Yeah, thanks, and good night.
The needle on the record, put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record when the drum beats go like this.
The only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
Put the needle to the record, cause the needle is defective, and the needle breaks the record when the needle is the method for prevention of the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method feeds the fever. See the leader, diseases are invented in the lab. One believes it, or reading recent mentions of the jab, centered in a grand scab of corruption and lies, injecting views of doom from newsroom into the public eye. But now the floor has risen on a cause of autism. Doctors show research and scores applaud with them. It's mercury and vaccines, often there's more given. Peace ignored and forbidden, cause profit is war driven. A score billion on vaccines alone, and the government don't care, they're always taxing the clones. And the CDC is right behind this rolling cart, part involved from the start in this evolving art. A big pharma, big deception, Obama, big karma. Enter White, Roach, Bayer and Baxter Healthcare. All assorted history with stacks of health scares. You got HIV and bird flu mixed up in the shops. I've been connecting the dots between the money that swaps. Conspiracy? Yeah, I sense a couple of plots.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no.
say no to the vaccine.
And if the doctor says that they can take it himself, just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if Obama says that they can take it himself, just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no affliction. Corporate pharmaceutical teaming with politicians. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we want spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They adding to the list pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, Alexa Finland, GlaxoSmithKline, cough and margin fine. Still ain't seen your disease, Mac, how cough and better swine. Your population linked with holding vaccines. Rather let a product lapse and save some human beings. Now that this is kind of dipping, so they want to hear us when we're running on the machine. Yeah, another flu, yo, that ain't our biggest threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. There just ain't no taste in their newsfeed.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
No, why don't you go first?
One little word that can save your health.
Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
If the doctor says, yes, he'll make him take it himself.
Say no, no, no. Say no to the vaccine.
There's one little word that can save your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if Obama says, yes, he'll make him take it himself. Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
Don't get any injection. You never know what's in them. They're all poison.
The needle on the record.
And there's no record that they ever prevent anything.
The vaccine manufacturers need approximately 8 to 9 months to produce the amount of vaccine that's going to be required for immunizing the at-risk populations. And so we have to make our recommendations almost a year in advance.
Tja, you need to stand up for your rights.
So where was I? Conspiracies, secret ops and spy stations. And the catchword of the year, depopulization. But humans generally are hard to kill, even with the jar of pills. That's why the politicians have to pass a bill for compulsory Gardasil. From Malta to Dargaville and farther still, another bill protects this evil Gardasil. Make a murk from liability for illness or death that may occur. Cause infertility and cancer are hidden inside the prick. And immune disorders have you bedridden, retired and sick. Research is your friend, knowledge keeping.
Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Herewood Fenton, and welcoming back to the show, Josh Jackson. Josh, welcome back.
How are you, Herod? It's always lovely to be the co-host of this amazing show where we just get some of the best guests on revealing some really topical matters. And that interview with Leon is no different.
It is awesome to have the opportunity to speak to really passionate people about really important topics. It's a kind of an honor to be in a position to do this, even though it can be difficult at times. I really feel it's very important, very spiritual. I can't really describe it, you know, other than to say it's
virtuous.
I sometimes stay away from those words because it makes me sound a little bit too prissy, but you know what I mean? I think it is. I think there is virtue there.
Well, absolutely. You know, you choose something that you're passionate about, you know, and look, the same goes for the people that actually are for this, you know, myth of global warming. They're passionate too, and that I guess is virtue that they're really, deep inside they do care for the planet. But the sad thing is they're very misguided, and they just need to open their eyes to some of and to turn off that cognitive dissonance, which has been collected up over the years of, you know, just looking into one side and being propagandized, if that's a word, and actually, you know, put aside the vested interests that they've put into the study of global warming to actually the other side of it, which makes a whole lot of sense. And there's literally, 30,000 scientists that agree. And so it's just it's extraordinarily important. That's all I have to say about
that,
I guess.
What more can we say? Look, I'm just going to take a short break here. I've got a few little technical issues that I've got to resolve. So I'm just going to take a really quick break for our listeners. It will be imperceptible, but I'm just going to pause it there. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, well, hopefully that woke you up. I should mention, I didn't mention the song we were listening to earlier. It's a New Zealand band, Trillion, Just Say No to the Vaccine, excellent rap song. I don't listen to a lot of rap, but that was great.
A little bit of hip-hop, a bit of urban poetry. Doesn't go down too badly. So we've got a couple of big topics here this week. The Obama czar, the science czar, which it's put has called in a 1960s book that he wrote to mass sterilizations and.
Well, hang on. Let's get our facts straight here. It was written in 1977.
70, right.
Okay. And he is the top science advisor to President Obama. And the book is called Eco-Science. And yes, it does call for sterilization. It calls for radical population reduction methods. It hints at coercive methods of many kinds. What's scary about it, right, is that this guy is now in a position of great power and authority within the Obama regime. And it was going crazy on the blogs last week. Then it was picked up by InfoWars. It's just, the fact is, that you get someone like this who's got that amount of influence, who has in the past at least harbored these kind of ideas, hardcore eugenics ideas, folks. Okay, coercive methods, a planetary regime. Okay, putting sterilizing agents into the water. This should be absolutely horrifying. Now, imagine if a Holocaust denier or a known Nazi was in a position of high government office, someone who'd been a known Nazi, someone who'd advocated racialist policies of Adolf Hitler.
Oh, well, let's just put it a little bit simpler. Imagine someone gets out and says, we should have mass sterilization of if a mother's single, then she should definitely be interviewed, and if she has a child, that child, or if she's pregnant, should be aborted. Forced abortions, folks. I mean, would you allow that sort of person into a high position of power? Of course you wouldn't. I mean, he's a psychopath. You'd say, oh, that's a psychopath. Well, folks, that's exactly what he's called for in his book.
Indeed.
His book is the No Growth Society.
The No Growth Society is not the one that has the quotes you're talking about. The No Growth Society is a more recent book, which is actually much more mild in what it says. The one that has the more extreme views is the one that he co-authored with Paul Ehrlich and a couple of other people in 1977.
Yes, sorry. I just got the website up now, so I'm trying to find the right article.
Look, the point is that some of these people, they couch their views in language that's a little bit vague sometimes. But then occasionally you see a book like this one that was printed in 1977, which lays it out really starkly. And then, of course, later on, they sort of cover it up again, right? Mm. But the fact is, they're on record as having said this. And it's only thanks to the blogging community that we know about this. Yes. Only thanks to the blogging community. And I just can't emphasize the importance of that. Because there have been many calls from mainstream sort of media, doyens of mainstream media, that blogging is some sort of poor cousin to real news, and that bloggers can never be real journalists. This is about keeping. This is about the core issue of why we have a free society. Mm. Sorry, please continue.
No, I was just going to add to that comment. If we look at blogs now, and what marries perfectly with blogs is, and I don't mean to be brand specific, but Twitter. I really started seeing the beauty of Twitter over the last few weeks in terms of freedom and freedom of speech. If you look at, for instance, the Iranian demonstrations, instantly we had the people embedded in their own situation, in their own areas, tweeting about these things. And when you tweet, you also tweet about blog posts that have been written. So instantly we've got to know from people on the streets in real time what's going on somewhere. So, anywhere in the world where an event is happening, you're seeing these tweets happening, and the mainstream media can't even keep up. So not only are we, as a blog, equal to the mainstream media, but they're actually far better. I mean, most very sort of internet savvy people will now go to Twitter or to find the latest good blog posts about a certain subject. If something's up and coming and right now, they'll go straight to Twitter because someone would have tweeted a good blog post or something about a certain subject. So really the blogosphere is the future of proper journalism. And look, yeah, you might get disinformation, you might get people that say stuff that isn't true, but look, that's the same with the mainstream media. You have to look at multiple sources, keep your mind open, always keep an eye on and keep critical. But I tell you what, the blogosphere plus Twitter type technologies are just phenomenal.
Yeah, and look, of course, you've got to use multiple sources, and you've got to understand the difference between real argument and ad hominem argument, because when we get into controversial topics, you find that those who wish to silence dissent almost always resort to an ad hominem style argument. Now, in regard to this story about Obama's science czar, the story was really brought out by a blogger on a site called zombietime.com. And he's been accused of being a right winger. And, the left will have one particular way of swaying your opinion. Well, they call someone a right winger, just like they call those who question anthropogenic global warming, they call them conservatives, or they say that they're supported by Exxon, or, this is what's called an ad hominem style argument. It's attacking the person and not the argument. You've got to be aware of that. You've got to see it so that you can then separate it from the actual substance of what's being done here. And this article here, which was published on Zombie Time, which I've now got up on the screen, is really excellent because it actually cites substantial quotes from the book in which he's making the claims. He's actually done photocopies and scanned them, so you can actually see scans of the book. And some of the...
And not only that, he scanned the quote, and then he says, look, if you don't believe this is from the book, I'll scan the entire page down the bottom as well, so you can see the quote up close next to the written quote so that's searchable by Google, and then the quote down the actual page scanned. It's very well done and very precise. So there's
it's very professional. Yeah, yeah. I mean, let me just read to you a quote from one of these passages. Single mothers should have their babies taken away by the government, or they could be forced to have abortions. One way to carry out this disapproval, and he's talking about, you know, disapproval of illegitimate children, one way to carry out this disapproval might be to insist that all illegitimate babies be put up for adoption, especially those born to minors, who generally are not capable of caring properly for a child alone. If a single mother really wished to keep her baby, she might be obliged to go through adoption proceedings and demonstrate her ability to support and care for it. I mean, look, that's just breathtaking, folks. Mm. Just step back a little. Mm. Just, I'll read that last sentence again. If a single mother really wished to keep her baby, she might be obliged to go through adoption proceedings.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's just absolutely sick. Sickening. Okay, here's another quote for you. And it's on the lines of mass sterilizations of humans through drugs and the water supply. You know, that's fine as long as you don't hurt the livestock. Okay, so here's the quote. Adding a sterilant to drinking water or staple foods is a suggestion that seems to horrify people more than most proposals for voluntary fertility control. Indeed, this would pose some very difficult political, legal, and social questions, to say nothing of the technical problems. No such sterilant exists today, nor does one appear to be under development. To be acceptable, such a substance would have to meet some rather stiff requirements. It must be uniformly effective, despite widely varying doses received by individuals, and despite varying degrees of fertility, and sensitive among individuals. It must be free of dangerous or unpleasant side effects, like what the, and it must have no effect on members of the opposite sex, children, old people, pets, or livestock.
Oh, how kind.
Isn't that kind of him? You know, mass sterilize everyone through drinking water and staple foods.
We must protect the livestock.
Must protect the livestock and the children.
Can you believe this?
This guy's in government now.
And he talks about a planetary regime.
Oh, yeah, planetary regime. He loves that.
It says here the planetary regime might be given responsibility for determining the optimum population for the world and for each region, and for arbitrating various countries' shares within their regional limits.
Yeah, and here's another one. We will need to surrender national sovereignty to an armed international police force.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. Just surrender it away. Yeah, because, you know, they'll be totally trustworthy, whoever they are, whoever this police force is. They'll be above the possibility of reproach or corruption, of course. They'll be just...
Oh, yeah. No, look, the police, they'll be very good people, the people in charge of that police force.
Oh, yeah. Unlike any other police force in the history of the planet. They will be just miraculously so just and wonderful.
Yeah. Here's the quote. If this could be accomplished, security might be provided by an armed international organization, a global analog of a police force.
Analog
of a police force. Many people have recognized that this is a goal, but the way to reach it remains obscure in the world where fractionalism seems, if anything, to be increasing. Oh, God, geez, we better not have fractionalism.
Oh, no,
better have total, utter control of everyone from the top down. The first step necessarily involves partial surrender of sovereignty to an international organization.
Well, I'm glad it was only partial. Gee.
Yeah, it's only partial, though, for now, you know.
Look, before you think that we're just crazies here foaming at the mouth over nothing, Google John Holdren. That's his name, John Holdren. He is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, assistant to the President for Science and Technology, and co-chair for the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. Okay, that's a hell of, that's a mouthful. That's his job title, okay? He would have personal meetings with Obama on a regular basis. Okay? Mm. He would be advising Obama.
Mm.
This man.
Yeah, we've got a psychopath advising Obama.
We'll put his photograph on the website for you so you can identify him in case you see him.
You should run. They should actually have something on the news saying this guy is extremely dangerous. If you see him in the streets, run, because he's a psychopath. Like, he just wants to, you know, kill everyone.
Yes, a dangerous killer. Indeed. A dangerous killer on the road.
I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he sort of was, you know, one of the funders of, you know, these Saw films, you know.
Well,
it's just a weirdo. If you want to see this article, this precise article, I'm sure we'll stick in the show notes, but it's http://zombietime.com. That's ZOM for Mary, BIETIME.com /John Holdren, JOHN_Holdren, HOLDREN. And it's just an amazing article. It really is quite horrifying. And he should definitely be thrown out of the White House. I mean, you can't have someone like, it's just sick.
And look, another thing I really like about this article is at the end, he actually has another section for the doubters and the naysayers, and he actually addresses possible counterclaims. He says here, there are five possible counterclaims which you may make against this report. One, I'm lying. Two, he may have said those things, but I'm taking them out of context. Three, he was just the co-author. He probably didn't write those particular passages. Four, what he said really isn't that egregious. In fact, it seems pretty reasonable. Five, he wrote all this a long time ago, and he's probably changed his views by now. Okay, well, each of those points are addressed. The contention that he might be lying, well, we've got the photos of the book. We've got the scans. I know it's been on InfoWars. I'm reasonably confident that this is not a hoax. Okay. I would like to see the book. I might even try and get a hold of it myself. I believe it's also in Google Books as well. So because it is so extreme in its nature, I think it is worthwhile just nailing it to be absolutely sure that this is correct. But I'm already
trying to get it secondhand, folks, so you don't put money in his pocket.
And we encourage our listeners, please, you know, if you can do that, get a hold of it so you can confirm that this is not a scam or a hoax. Okay. Point two, he may have said those things, but I'm taking them out of context. Well, again, he's quoted the context as well. So he's given all the surrounding quotes to really make sure that this is actually the thrust of what's being said in the book.
And look, if you are for you know, the right for abortion, which I think, you know, it's a very complex topic, but I definitely think that you know, between a certain time of, you know, if you've been, I mean, it's a very complex topic with human rights and with you know, property rights and all sorts. But what this guy is saying is that whether you like abortion or not, we need to do it forcibly by coercion. I mean, it's just obscene.
Yeah. Look, if as he says here, if you think that what he's saying isn't that bad, then I guess this page holds no interest for you, and you are free to ignore it. Look, the claims he's making here, the claims that John Holdren is making, they just go against everything our society has been founded on. It's what we fought World War II over, against fascism. I mean, what you've got to understand is that the fascist regimes in Europe were based on eugenics policies.
Mm.
And the eugenics policies that Hitler put in place were actually also, some of them were in place in America at the same time. For example, the sterilizing of people of what they call bad background, or, you know, single mothers who didn't have good prospects. anyone in a mental asylum sterilized. Well, those practices were conducted in the United States. But when it came to the final, you know, the conflict between fascism and democracy, and then when that was resolved, you know, when we beat Hitler and when we kicked Mussolini, right?
Oh, thank God we beat Hitler, because otherwise we'd have cameras in the streets everywhere and, you know, jackpot police telling us to tax everything and, and you know, mass sterilization of it. You know, I mean, thank God.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there were some reasons there that we were supposedly fighting for. So it's important to just remember that. Now, the last point here that he engages with, which I think is probably the most interesting one, is he wrote all this a long time ago. He's probably changed his views by now. Okay, now, first of all, I'll just give you my take on that, right? Because a lot of people might say that, oh, it was written, you know, 30 years ago. Well, if a person wrote 30 years ago about the joys of pedophilia, right, I don't think the fact that it was 30 years ago would let him off the hook. Do you?
Mm. No,
If someone advocated the mass extermination of Jews 30 years ago, I don't think they'd have a chance of getting anywhere near government. They'd probably, if they had continued writing that way, they'd be in prison under our, you know, other laws. So the question of it being a long time ago, I don't think lets that person off the hook. Now, the question is, has he changed his views? Well, he has never retracted his views, okay? And in the more recent book, which I think you mentioned earlier, Josh, he doesn't spell those views out anymore in that graphic way, but he certainly hints at them. I don't have the pages up here right in front of me, but we'll get that up online so you can look at those more recent quotes. And he's certainly hinting in the same direction. He's talking about, you know, the goals of population reduction, and he's never retracted his views. So what are we to think? What else can we assume? Okay.
I mean, here's a guy, honestly. I mean, on page 786, it says, you know, single mothers should have their babies taken away by the government or could be forced to have abortions. I mean, it's just... And this guy's in power right now. He is the guy that that gives scientific... how would you put it? Opinion you know, counsel directly to the president of the most powerful nation on earth.
Excellent. Look, we're getting a bit of a bad line there, Josh. I think we might have to reconnect. I'm just going to pause it and reconnect.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Okay, here we are on Truth News Radio Australia, just sailing through a sea of... confusion, trying to make stabs at truth, occasionally making contact with it. It's kind of like trying to stab a jellyfish, you know, with a plastic spoon.
What an analogy! I don't quite understand it, but yeah. It's kind of cool.
Hey, yeah.
Folks, I went to hospital the other day because I busted my foot while training in taekwondo, in the martial art of taekwondo, and I thought I'd broken my foot. So I went to hospital to get some x-rays done, and while I was sitting in this totally underfunded place, I sat there and I looked up at the... Just have a look at this place of health. I mean, that honestly, a hospital is meant to get you better, right? So I was looking around, and first, all the windows are shut. You know, there's not an open window, not any fresh air. Okay, so that's step one. I wonder if there's any good food around. There's only vending machines, plenty of chips and crisps and Mars bars and processed crap. Most of it with diet drinks in there. And there was one hot chocolate and coffee machine. So here we have a place of health with just aircon, total processed food, everything, aspartame everywhere in these diet drinks. And then I looked a bit closer and there was this little flyer saying it was a nutritional guide to the foods in this building or something like that, to the foods in this vending machine. And I gave the flyer to you, Harold, so
indeed,
read us a
have it,
line.
I have it right here before me. So let's just clarify. This flyer was distributed within the hospital, and it was
yes.
It's a glossy kind of threefold flyer titled "Thirsty for Information: A Nutrition Guide to Our Drinks." And on the bottom of the flyer, it says, "The Coca-Cola Company, make every drop matter." Now, this is a great slogan. So this is actually being handed out in the hospital. Is that correct? So do they have a stack of them, or was it like a...
It was a stack of them that was attached to every vending machine.
Right, right. So, I mean, this is a little bit different to your usual Coca-Cola vending machine. I mean, most offices and, you know, public places have them, but without this particular flyer. Obviously, they've done this just for the hospitals. And it's so kind, isn't it, what they've done?
Oh, it's very kind because it sets it all straight for you about, you know, what one of the things I love, one of it talks about just having a piece of cheese.
Yes, yes. Well, eating a piece of cheese is an excellent way to stay healthy. It says here, the Coca-Cola Company's new front-of-pack daily intake guide can help you balance your diet.
Mm.
Our daily intake guide features at a glance information about the energy content of our drinks, helping you balance the energy you take in with the energy you expend through physical activity.
Let me just say, anyone that drinks Coke daily in the first place is going to end up where that flyer came from.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a heroin dealer telling you how to, like, you know... stay healthy, or it's like an arms manufacturer putting out information about first aid, or it's just
that's a great analogy. It is. It's like you know, the heroin dealer telling you your daily dietary intake of heroin and what's good for you.
Look, we're going to scan this and put it up on the site.
But one of the great sections it talks about saying clean your teeth with fluoride. Make sure to clean your teeth with fluoride. It then goes on to say, make sure you wash your mouth out with tap water. It then goes on about how aspartame is really good for you and you lose weight. And there's been over 200 studies done showing that it's totally safe.
It says it has been safely consumed for nearly a quarter of a century and is one of the most thoroughly studied food ingredients. Well, there's a whole other body of information on an aspartame, which we'll cover. You know, we'll probably do a whole show on that sometime. I think we'll stay away from it for now. But look,
they didn't mention the study that caused cancer in rats and stuff. But you know,
yes. Yes, it does say here also about drinking tap water. It says here that. You should keep your teeth and gums clean by brushing twice a day with fluoride toothpaste. And it says to rinse your mouth with tap water. Eat some cheese or chew sugar-free gum after eating. See, it's simple, okay? Why do we even need hospitals when we've got this kind
Why do we need hospitals when we've got that great flyer telling us to eat cheese?
We just need Coca-Cola to take care of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, thanks for that. Look, we've got some, we've got a few more weighty things to get through, and we actually only have, another 10 minutes or so for the show, unfortunately.
Bring on the weight.
So I just will try and just power through it because I just want to focus on the vaccination situation.
Huge.
There's been a lot of news coming out from Australia, from the UK. alarmist stories popping up. It's increasing in its alarmism. Okay, they're talking about increasing deaths. They're talking about younger people dying of swine flu, and they're talking about mass vaccination programs. The UK has said they're going to skip all of the normal evaluation procedures for a vaccine. They're just going to go straight to just injecting you, and that's because they care about you so much.
There's never any mention of things like olive leaf extract or keeping yourself healthy, making sure, it's just, when's the vaccination coming out?
And look, let's dispense with all these silly trials and nonsense, because we've got to help people and save them. So they're just going to rush the vaccine out, and they're just going to mass vaccinate everyone. See?
Well, you don't need a trial. You just vaccinate everyone and see how many people die,
Yeah, well, that's matter. Certainly that
have
that's
really
one way of
bad
trialing.
Side effects. And
it's one way of trialing. And then, of course,
have
you
a stroke
deny.
On half this face.
And, of course, if someone drops dead 5 minutes after having a vaccine, you say, oh, it was just a heart attack. Unrelated. Yeah. It's just. And then you dramatize these sort of nutty people who make a big deal of it as if they've got some mental problem,
And folks, we're not saying here that this flu virus isn't something to be, cautious about. It definitely is, and you should make sure you've got things like vitamin C and your olive leaf extracts and
indeed.
Look, there's plenty of places. Naturalnews.com has got some great articles about it and how to protect yourself from an influenza attack. But the thing is, they keep talking about these. They have this death toll count now. I've never seen a death toll count on the fly for any other flu variant.
Well, it happened with the SARS epidemic.
SARS? Yep.
Which was another one of those sort of overly dramatized things. The level of hysteria over this seems to be more extreme. Now, same as saying that, and I like to play down alarmist, stories, because I don't think it really helps focus. However, on the other side...
But what I'm saying is, it's good to have some storable food in the house in case you need to...
Indeed. Look, there is evidence that this virus has been created in a lab. We've raised that earlier in previous episodes, and there's more disturbing issues coming out with it, which we will just quickly inform you of, because the company Baxter, right, has been involved in some very, very serious scandals of a criminal nature, where 23 people in Poland died as a result of one of their trials. And they've been... there's been a number of bizarre events that have occurred, such as a container full of virus exploded on a train in Switzerland.
Yeah, so they had to ship this to a lab, and they took this train, which A, didn't make any sense because the train was sort of heading in a direction to some sort of airport that didn't have the plane going to the place. I don't know quite the details, but I remember just thinking, what's going on there? Why is he on the train with a whole bunch of, was it bird flu or swine flu?
I think it was swine flu. But they said it wasn't the bad swine flu. It was just the average swine flu. What the heck does that
mean? Hang on. So he's traveling on a train, which has got plenty of commuters.
Yeah.
On it, and the whole package explodes.
Yeah, it just exploded.
Just explodes.
Some mistake with the dry ice,
Yeah, oops. And these people just go home. Everyone on the train, the authorities took names, but they didn't question anyone. They allowed everyone just to go home and, enjoy the rest of their day. I mean, that just seems to me like an absolute atypical way of, starting a chain reaction of some sort of bio-warfare sort of, not bio-warfare, but bio-sales pitch, I guess, to a vaccine. Yeah. I mean, that's basically what it is. You want to get out some sort of virus to then have the vaccine. I mean, it sounds ridiculous. It sounds like something out of a James Bond film, but it really isn't that much of a stretch of an imagination.
Well, Baxter is shipping large amounts of this virus around the world. They brought in 72 kilos, apparently, into Europe recently.
72 kilos?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this virus?
This was reported... now, I just need to cover this story about the Austrian woman, Jane Burgermeister, who is a journalist, who has raised some of these issues. And she's actually charging Baxter with really crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
And she's actually trying to get a criminal investigation going. And she's urged people around the world to participate in this in different countries. And look, we'll put relevant notes on our site. And again, we urge anyone listening to take this up because we don't have time. Josh and I are really busy. We don't have time to follow up in detail these stories. So the story about the criminal charges against Baxter being laid by Jane Burgermeister, extremely important. The problem here is that when these biotech companies are involved in producing vaccines, the only way you can produce a vaccine is by starting off with a live virus. Now, if you're going to produce 40 million vaccinations, where are you going to get that from? You've got to culture huge amounts of virus just to get the vaccines, right? Mm. So there's a chicken or egg situation which can develop here because you're creating all this virus so you can create the antidote to the virus. But if all this virus you're creating leaks out by an accident like someone on a train with the too much dry ice in the container and it goes boom, then the whole idea that what you're doing is actually about protecting people kind of goes out the window, doesn't it? Because what you're actually really doing is you're disseminating a bioweapon, okay? Now, regardless of what the actual intent here is, and Jane Burgermeister is basically claiming that there is deliberate intent, there is intent for mass killings. I don't know, but the extreme dereliction of responsibility and these extreme events such as the deaths of the people in Poland and the transporting of the virus without proper safety controls needs proper oversight, needs to be looked into. And that's where I stand on it. I'm not going to go overboard with the, you know, they're trying to kill us all argument because honestly, I just have to try and keep myself calm. And I don't want to go there yet. Okay.
Well, look, it doesn't make sense because if they want to try and, you know, kill us with a vaccine that's going to kill everyone. To me, that doesn't make sense because if we started seeing a whole hell of a lot of people dropping dead because of vaccines, most people just would stop taking it, you know, unless they then forcibly did and then they would just be, you know, just couldn't do it.
Yeah, indeed.
So, you know, it is important to keep your wits about you, just not, you know, run at these extremes. But I definitely think that there needs to be thorough investigations into Baxter. Just having a bunch of virus on a train, on a packed train, is so wrong. And it goes against all procedure, I'm sure.
It's just shocking. It's just totally shocking and totally ridiculous. And the British government... asserting that they will go ahead and disseminate vaccines without going through the trials. Just basically just flaunting that now. Not even pretending anymore.
Look, I mean, a lot of people are saying this is for, you know, to kill people and all this, but I mean, to just sensibly, I think it's more of a fact that they just want to sell a hell of a lot of no-bid contracted, government-contracted antiviral medications by basically, you know, spreading having a pandemic to then have the answer to the pandemic. And yeah, if it kills people, they don't give a toss because they don't know what it'll do because it's untested because they have to rush this vaccine out so fast to try and make it to market. And so, you know, that's why I don't trust the stuff that they create at all because it's totally untested.
And look, we need to disseminate the knowledge that you don't need to be vaccinated in order to be protected from the flu, okay? We need to disseminate the knowledge that the best way to be protected from the flu is to stay healthy and eat good food, get the right amount of exercise, don't work too hard, have reasonably good personal hygiene, and then you will get the flu. Everyone gets the flu from time to time, but guess what? You'll have a few days off and you'll feel so much better from staying in bed for a couple of days that it's almost, you know, it's something you kind of need every now and then.
Well, it's a workout for your immune system. It's like going to the gym.
Yeah.
Like, I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's an expert in NLP and those sort of things, and he was sort of saying, you know, a lot of flu and stuff is based on people's mind as well, on their attitude.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, they get so fearful from what they see on the news that they get the virus instantly. Whereas there's a lot of people who will just say, nah, I never get sick. And just having that mindset makes their bodies, because the immune system is very, very highly connected to your mind and to the way you think and your attitude. And by, you know, going around being fearful and a hypochondriac, you know, you're pretty much going to come down with something. I mean, just look at the placebo effect. It's been proven time and time and time again that the placebo effect is a valid and a very powerful effect, and so, you know, it's important to have a good state of mind as well as keeping up a good nutritious diet and exercise.
Absolutely. And look, I'd like to just send a message out to our listeners that to tell other people about this. Don't be shy to talk about it. I mean, I've been talking about it recently with co-workers, and I'm finding quite a few people are actually already aware. But the more you feel free to talk about it, the better, you know, the better impact we can actually have. And, you know, talk about vaccination. Talk about Truth News, by the way. Tell your friends about Truth News Radio Australia.
Please.
And in our next email, I'm going to put a link in the email to our subscriber friend page. And when you get that email, just click on that link, and it'll take you to a page where you can subscribe a friend, and they'll get a special email, a personalized email that's like an invitation that says your friend has invited you to join this subscription.
And we don't keep any of those emails. They're not kept in a database or anything. It's just a one-off email that goes out. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that email will go out, and then they'll have an opportunity to either join up. They won't be automatically registered. They'll get an invitation. And so if they accept the invitation, they have to return it, then they'll actually be put on the list. So you're not spamming. There's no spam. It's voluntary. And that's the way we work.
And it's really important that more people, if you don't feel comfortable disseminating good information, because a lot of people aren't, you know, a lot of people, they want to tell people about, you know, all sorts of stuff, the New World Order, the 9/11, the global warming stuff, but they think, well, what's the net gain here? I'm just going to get a whole lot of grief. I'm not going to change anything, and people are going to look at me funny like I'm a weirdo. So, you know, if you don't feel comfortable with it, let us do it. But I tell you what, it only takes you to try it out once and you'll soon feel comfortable. It's like when you first start to barter, when you first say, oh, can we have a discount on that? You know, it feels sort of weird saying that to a shopkeeper, but then you do it again and it starts becoming easier and easier, and after a while you start doing it everywhere. It's the same sort of thing. When you start telling people about, you know, things like the global warming scam that's happening, it's a bit weird at first and it's a bit awkward and you don't know how to react to certain things, and after a while it becomes easier and easier, and after a while you're just the go-to guy to about questions about, you know, things like global warming and you know, it's and it'll make your life a lot happier. You'll feel happier because you become, you know, it really does make you a happier person to disseminate truth as you know it.
Thanks for that beautiful roundup there, Josh. Look, we're going to have to terminate. We've had an excellent show. The interview tonight is one of my most important.
Please give some donations to that party. I'm not a big fan of giving donations to political parties, but these guys need members. It's only $10 or something like that, and it puts a number on their list so that they can, because they need, 500 names, and then they become legit or something like that?
Yes.
in terms of a party to get in there. It is very important. It's one of the most important, like you said, it's one of the most important interviews you've ever done. And so giving, I'm sure we'll put a link to them on the show notes. Is that right?
We'll have all relevant information and also information so you can join the climate change skeptics if you wish, which is something that we discussed, because they need to get over the 500 so they can actually contest an election.
So that's right.
Yeah.
And our Twitter page is going off, folks.
Yeah, Twitter is going off. Get onto it. You know, just, you know, suck it up.
Truth News Oz. At Truth News Oz.
Yeah.
Is it?
Truth News Oz. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, truth at Truth News Oz Oz, and give us a tweet or a twat, and we'll
retweet. We'll retweet you if you tweet us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well,
cheers, Harold.
It's been a terrific night, and good night, and good luck.